the holiday Monday, so I'm thinking it might be calmer, quieter on the roads. I hope that's the case for you. If you're up and working, maybe you're out of your typical routine because you're taking advantage of an early morning on a holiday to get out of town, to get back into town, whatever the case is. We're glad you chose us to keep you company. We're going to pack as much as we possibly can into this final hour. I don't think we're going to get to every game, in part because of baseball. The NLCS is underway. We're also getting set for ALCS to start on Monday, but do want to go through some of what happened. We knew the Dodgers offense would be there. The Dodgers pitching is what's been most impressive. So that series is one game old. Also, Lions and Cowboys from Sunday afternoon at Dallas. If you're wondering, you're waking up on this Monday morning and you're wondering, did McCarthy get fired? No, I'm sorry to tell you, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm not sorry that he didn't get fired, so don't misunderstand me. But I am sorry to disappoint you if that's what you want and that's what you're expecting. According to Jerry Jones, oh, I haven't even considered that. That's a quote. I haven't even considered that. I'm not considering that. Just so you're clear, I'm not considering that. And we'll hear from Jerry Jones this hour.
Buy into us.
Mike McCarthy, Jerry Jones, the Dallas Cowboys, even that depleted defense, the inability to run the ball. This is a team that's still sitting at 3-3. Now, it does feel like the sky is falling. Why? Well, I asked that question of Babe Laufenberg. He's the former Cowboys quarterback who's now partnered with Brad Sham on the Cowboys radio network. So we'll get to that game a little bit later. And if you missed the conversation with Babe and you want to hear it in its entirety, you can check it out on our Monday morning podcast. It's our version of Monday morning quarterback here on After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, you can find the Monday MVP poll. It may be a holiday, but we still have to find our Monday MVP. This hour, we're going to jam in as much as we possibly can, like the Houston Texans on the road in New England, where Drake May got his first start as a rookie quarterback. So think about it. Spencer Rattler, we just were talking about him for the New Orleans Saints last hour. Of course, we already knew that we had Bo Nix in Denver. Haven't quite gotten to him. It's just a wild ride with rookies. They giveth and they taketh away at the quarterback position. Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, terrific as the one and the two. But now we're looking at five. The top three QBs that were selected, 1, 2, and 3, they're all starting along with Bo Nix and now Spencer Rattler until Derek Carr is healthy. That's five rookie quarterbacks continually bringing down the average age of the NFL QB. It's now below 27 years old, and I dare say it's going to get even lower. So we'll get to what we can, but yes, Houston and New England, we haven't talked about yet. A big deal for the Texans because they get back their running tandem of Joe Mixon. Remember, he was victim of a hip drop tackle and was pretty ticked at the NFL for not making a point of emphasis of it or allowing it to go on. And he was injured in that way. And then Damian Pierce also returning. And so a nice 1-2 punch for CJ Stroud and the offense on the road in New England, where the Texans, going back to the days of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, have notoriously struggled. Of course, that's the case for a lot of teams that were there. Also, Jim Harbaugh ends up leaving the Chargers-Broncos game because of illness. Now, he returned, but I'm not sure I've ever seen a coach in a blue tent. And then he left the sidelines. Even so, as he was doing it, his brother was doing his postgame comments in Baltimore and actually left abruptly from his postgame presser to make sure that his brother was okay. So news travels fast in families across the country, to be sure. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to do, but we've already covered a lot of the territory in week number 6. So you can find the podcast again at Amy After Hours once the show is done as well. Just tell your smart speaker or your phone, your smartphone. Mine is sometimes dumb, but your smartphone to play After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Sunday Night Football, won't spend a ton of time on it, only to say that the Bengals were able to get a win and they were proud of what they got from their defense. No, they weren't facing the Baltimore Ravens like they did last week, in which they gave up 41 points, but they were on the road at New York. The Bengals right now will take any kind of win as long as it's an actual legit win. And they opened the game with a touchdown drive, and they had the final statement, the final exclamation point at MetLife.
Second down and three with 1:58 to go. The Bengals line up in a pistol formation with Chase Brown behind Joe Burrow. All goes in motion. They give it to Chase Brown.
Nice.
He's got the first down four. Up the middle of the field. 10, 5, rolls into the end zone. Touchdown! Bengals with 1:52 to go. And that is coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam. Why do I hear Dave Lapham saying that on the Bengals radio network? That's Dan Hort along with Dave. So yeah, final touchdown comes inside of the 2-minute warning, and they don't have nearly as many points as they had a week ago themselves. But a win is a win is a win is a win. And Joe Burrow, 19 of 28, 208 yards, no passing touchdowns. So I guess he used them all up last week. No, that's not how it works. He did have a rushing touchdown, and the Bengals also get what they need in terms of their defense to be able to limit the New York Giants. And that was really where the focus was for Zach Taylor, is being proud of his defense.
Just a resilient group that goes about it the right way, believes in each other, believes in what we're doing. And that's what I expect to see from those guys. And so this was a great way on Sunday Night Football in front of the world for them to show who they are, because that's what we see every day, and that's the belief that we have in them.
Burrow did get roughed up a bunch. There's a pretty gnarly pass rush with the New York Giants. And considering that they don't have a ton on offense and really struggle to run the ball, it's important for them to try to limit their opponents as much as possible. This was a defense with teeth. And Burrow, he said recently, we're not a championship level team, not playing like this. We aren't. This is essentially now a critical mass. And he echoed that on Sunday night. We desperately needed this win.
We'd be scratching and clawing for the rest of the year. We still really are, but it's good to get a win. Great to see our defense step up like that. They've taken some heat the last couple weeks, but they played awesome today.
As for the Giants, even though there was a pretty significant crowd that was there, now keeping in mind the Giants were playing on Sunday Night Football at the same time that the New York Mets were on the road in Los Angeles. So fans either had to make a choice or were having to watch the game on their phones while they're sitting there at MetLife. New York has a turnover and two missed field goals in the second half. So even though they went over 100 yards rushing, I mean, Daniel Jones is their leading rusher. That's not optimal. He does have a pick, and he barely gets over 200 yards. You can say it's about the missing pieces, not having Malik Nabers, their number one draft pick, who's been such a star already. But they've got other guys they're plugging in. Their rookie running back as well. Is he a rookie? He is a rookie, right? Maybe he's not a rookie. Maybe he's early in his career. I'll go back and look just to be confirmed. But they are getting other guys that are plugged in. It's just, this is not an offense that's built to wow anybody. And against the Bengals, it was tough sledding. So Brian Daboll is scowling these days.
You know, I thought we had some opportunities, throughout the game. Whether it be run, whether it be pass, we turned the ball over down there, on that drive, which was a good drive, and to come away with no points. And then I think 5 of 15, somewhere around there. Now we were aggressive on fourth down, as I thought we needed to be against this offense, but just couldn't generate any explosive plays.
I was right. Always go with your first answer. Tyrone Tracy is a rookie out of Purdue. Boiler up. He had a big game in terms of carries and in terms of just being involved in the offense because of what they're missing. He had 23 touches and was able to amass over 100 yards. But unfortunately, right now, they just don't have a lot of pop, and they can't afford any mistakes because, as you hear Brian Daboll say, against a good team, they just don't have that kind of margin for error. So the Giants fall to 2-4. The Bengals are also 2-4, although it's crazy how the same record can look so different. I said this earlier. The Niners are 3-3. They have a mini bye. They finally beat a division opponent. They're 3-3. That's the same record for the Dallas Cowboys, and yet it seems like the sky is falling for Dallas and for its fans. So again, we'll talk about them following the update at the bottom of the hour. But Bengals and the Giants on Sunday Night Football. Now it's the Jets on Monday night hosting at MetLife against the Buffalo Bills. That's an AFC East matchup. Okay, so while the Giants were on the field, the Mets were on the road in Los Angeles, where the Dodgers offense flexes its muscles, makes very quick work of Kodai Senga. Not a surprise. I mean, we're talking about an offense that's been potent for most of the year.
No score in the bottom of the first inning. A 2-1 pitch. Muncy swings, fights it to center field. This ball will get down. Mookie scores. Freddie trying to come around. The throw is cut off. He steps on the plate. Max Muncy with a two-out, two-run single. 2-0 Dodgers off the bat. Senga at the belt, looking ahead toward third base. Comes home. Ohtani swings and chops it to the right side and to right field, a base hit. Alonzo Dove couldn't get there. Here comes Lux. RBI single, Shohei Ohtani. Make it 3-0 Dodgers.
The call on Dodgers radio. I'm not sure if you saw the moment where Ohtani was on base and nearly got hit in the head by a ball from the Mets shortstop. Francisco Lindor, it whizzed by Ohtani's ear. And even though Ohtani wasn't facing him when he was standing on second base, the reaction as he heard the ball and kind of felt the ball whiz by him. But he was fired up. And the Dodgers offense, they're locked in. I mean, they had plenty of offense. They chased Senga in the second inning. He allowed 3 runs on a couple of hits and 4 walks, but only threw 30 pitches before the Mets had to go out there and get him. And it continued. I mean, the big blows, of course, Ohtani's going to get a lot of attention. He was 2-for-4 with a walk and an RBI, as well as a couple runs scored. But Mookie Betts, also good for him, considering that he started out the postseason. Was it 0-for-22 or 1-for-22? And people were wondering what was wrong with Mookie.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Mookie Betts hits it on the ground. Beyond a diving Vientos at third. Down the line and fair. Kike's in. Kiermaier scores. Shohei coming around. No play at the plate. A 3-run double from Mookie Betts. He unloads the bases and makes it 9-0 Dodgers.
On Dodgers radio, they didn't even need that much, but they were able to get plenty of run support for Jack Flaherty, who goes 7 innings. And yeah, that offense, it can be gaudy, it can be dazzling, but honestly, that's not the most impressive part of what the Dodgers are doing right now. Coming out of the NLDS against San Diego and an offense that was red hot, and now into the start of the championship series against New York. I never would have thought I'd be sharing this stat with you. It's not just a stat, actually. It's a record for the postseason. The Dodgers staff, pitching staff, whether it be the rotation itself, which, my goodness, has gone through how many iterations, or the bullpen, their pitchers combined have tied the postseason record with 33 consecutive scoreless innings. The Dodgers pitching have not given up a run since the second inning of game 3 against the Padres. That blows my mind. If you were following the Dodgers this year, or just following baseball, you may know they used 20 different starting pitchers this year. A bunch of rookies. And how many times have we seen Dave Roberts have to resort to bullpen starts in these playoffs alone? 6 games already. I think 3 of them have been bullpen starts. Flaherty was much better in this one. And I saw this really neat note about him. This comes from Rowan Kavner, who is an MLB writer for Fox. In 2013, Jack Flaherty won a high school championship by throwing 7 shutout innings at Dodger Stadium. 11 years later, he's a local guy, obviously, went to high school in the area, another 7 scoreless innings, 98 pitches, 6 strikeouts, mostly preserving the bullpen from having to go out there and eat up a lot of innings, considering that Dave Roberts is going to have to use a bullpen start on Monday.
A pitching clinic. I thought he did a great job of filling up the strike zone with his complete mix, used his fastball when he needed to, just minimize damage. And, you know, once we caught a lead, he did a great job of just going after those guys and attacking. And you know, for us to get seven innings in a long series was huge.
I felt like my stuff in against San Diego was okay, but even in that game, I was able to get some outs and put a couple zeros together, and then was just able to clean some things up in my delivery and work on a couple things, work on my stuff, and you know, warm up before the game felt good yesterday, and just then it just comes out to executing.
Can you imagine how cool this is for Flaherty? Because of the significance 11 years later, now he's pitching for the Dodgers, and he was obviously a trade deadline acquisition. If you would like to see Francisco Lindor nearly take Shohei Ohtani's head off, that GIF or that quick video from Fox is now up on our show account at Amy After Hours. The reaction of Ohtani. Again, he can't see it because Lindor is behind him. This was a huge deal for the Dodgers to come out with a win at home, at Dodger Stadium, and to follow it up with more offense than what we saw, especially in Game 5 against San Diego. But the fact that they have not given up a run since Game 3, early in Game 3, when it's been a pitching rotation and bullpen kind of held together with duct tape and string, and just anything Dave Roberts can do. I know they've only won, I'm using my air quotations only, because certainly the Padres would take one. They've only won a single World Series, despite the fact that they've almost always had these high-priced lineups and rosters. The Dodgers have essentially owned the NL West. They've won, 11 of the last 12 division titles. Just 1 year losing to the Giants, and that took every last day of the regular season. They dominate this division. They are now back in the NLCS. They've got just one World Series to show for these lineups. They spent $700 million on Ohtani. Not even pitching this year, although he's worth the price of admission. But for them, the pitching's been their Achilles heel. And to be able to quiet a lineup like the Padres in two games, really two and a half games, and then also to do it to start out against the Mets, that's got to give them great confidence. And what Roberts and his pitching coaches are doing is masterful. But credit the Dodgers for rising to the occasion. They're tied with the Baltimore Orioles going all the way back to 1966 in the World Series. Most consecutive scoreless inning streak in a single postseason. At A-Law Radio, our show account, at Amy After Hours, vote for Monday MVP. It does include one Derrick Henry yet again because he is worthy. We're going to get to New England trotting out its rookie quarterback, yet another one who's making his debut in week number 6. Caleb Williams at a coming out party in London, so he's part of our Monday MVP as well. The rookies, man, they're grabbing the headlines. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Now the Patriots have it from the 40. Shot to step back to May. He's in the pocket. He wears back. He throws a long ball down the right side. There's some separation. Yes. Touchdown pass.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Sean Booty on a perfect dime from Drake May as he beats Stingley down the right side.
Mayday!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Patriots Radio Network, Drake May, his first touchdown in the NFL. So welcome to the NFL rookie. Yeah, this is a tough battle for the New England Patriots and their rookie. So allowing him to take over after a handful of starts with Jacoby Brissett. And five of the first six first... all right. So I'm not a rookie, but that sounded like it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Five of the six first half possessions, they were pretty tough. And it was one of those, hey, the Houston Texans are happy to see you. Welcome to the league, rookie. An interception. There was a fumble after a sack as well to start the second half. But it was good to see May air it out. His first touchdown pass was a 40-yarder to Kayshawn Boutte late in the first half. And you could see that he has the accuracy and he's got the ability to go downfield. I mean, there's so much happening with this offense. We've talked about the offensive line and how tough it is. Excuse me. Seriously, okay. What's happening to me? I get choked up talking about the Patriots offense.
Throw your snacks over there.
I don't have any snacks. They're gone.
They have yogurts and...
Oh, well, I haven't opened it. Don't tell people I'm eating on the air. The yogurt is closed. It's for the break during the update. Look, do you see the yogurt is not open? Stop it. Don't be telling people that I'm eating while I'm on the air. Even so, they could probably hear my stomach growling because this is how it is.
Well, I'm not saying you're doing it now. I'm saying you do it maybe during a break or something, like everyone else.
Well, I didn't choke on my yogurt. It's just one of those things. It's a Monday, okay? All right, great. Let's call some attention to it. I'm feeling like the rookie. The Patriots, their offensive line, well documented their issues. And so that, and by the way, they're without Ramondre Stevenson. And so they're leaning on their rookie quarterback in a way that he kind of has to sink or swim. But we did see him in some special moments be able to spark the offense. It's just that it's tough sledding with this particular group. He had a couple of interceptions, but nearly 300 total yards. And he actually was New England's leading rusher without Ramondre Stevenson. But Will Anderson was happy to meet him, sacked him 3 times out of the 4 Houston sacks. And C.J. Stroud, you can kind of see where he and the Texans are a year ahead for Drake May. I dare say the Patriots and their fan base would take, well, they certainly would take a rookie year like what C.J. Stroud had. I'm not sure that's possible, but they would take a year down the road being in the same spot as C.J. and his weapons are now, as his offense is right now. They don't have Nico Collins, but he was able to complete touchdown passes to Stephon Diggs, to Tank Dell, to Joe Mixon, who was back in the lineup. And this was huge. This was really where the Houston Texans got their juice on Sunday with the 2 running backs who are back on the field.
Stroud gives to Joe. Over left guard. Bounces to the outside. 15, 10, 5 to the pylon. He's got it! Touchdown, Joe Mixon. Checked back into the game and checks into the end zone for 6 on a 20-yard TD run. First down, Texans at the Houston 46. Clock at 8 minutes to go. 13-point lead. Here's a toss to Pierce. Running right. Pierce across the 50. Pierce breaks the tackle. 45, 40, right sideline. The 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. He's got the touchdown. Damian Pierce to the house.
Welcome back, 31.
Yeah, well, welcome back to both Mixon and Pierce. They were a formidable tandem and coming on board right when the Texans desperately need them. 192 total rushing yards. Mixon, he's part of our Monday MVP poll, over 100 yards, 13 carries for him, plus the score. Mark Vandermeer and company there on Texans radio. So yeah, they brought a ton of energy. And as you can imagine, that's exactly what D'Amico Ryans needed to see.
Those guys bring playmaking ability, right? Even not just getting what the run is blocked for, but when your backs are special, they get more than what is blocked for. And that's what you saw today with the explosive runs, 2 big explosive runs, 1 by Damian and 1 by Joe. That's right. When you got backs who can do that extra, right, and that's where they're capable of doing, of giving us the extra. And for both guys, get touchdowns today, that was big.
Because the Patriots were swimming upstream most of the game, they fell behind, I think it was 14-0 early, and had to try to get back. It's just a tough situation to be in. And when the defense also has to hold Mixon and Pierce as a 1-2 punch at bay, you're talking about it being a veritable challenge anyway. However, believe that what you see with Drake May shows you, at least initially, that this guy's got the skills and just needs some reps. And Jerod Mayo, not unhappy with his rookie.
Drake made some good decisions out there. I thought he had some good reads. I thought he tried to get the ball out of his hands. I thought he did a good job extending plays with his legs and picking up first downs. So just got to be better.
Yeah, I wish I had some throws back, and especially, you know, the first, you know, interception. But after the touchdown, you feel like coming back in it, coming out of halftime, and there goes, you know, another turnover in the red zone. So just kept on, you know, hurting ourselves, and, you know, in this league, you know, these teams are too good to do that.
Well, that's true. That's a lesson that every rookie probably knows even before he steps on the field. That's 3 straight wins for the Texans. They go 3-for-3 in the red zone, and they're now tied with the Vikings and the Chiefs, who are both off this weekend. Most wins in the NFL, that's 5. So we don't know if the Chiefs and the Vikings will move to 6-0 and get there. But now the Texans, until they have their bye, they're sitting on that same plane. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Seen a bunch of your write-in votes for Monday MVP, and actually some of them I totally agree with. But for now, the poll is out. Welcome to reply and give us your own candidate. I can imagine there are plenty of Lions fans out there that are anxious to see and hear their players talked about on this Monday, and we will do that following the update. But while we're talking about rookie quarterbacks, so the Patriots, they're going with Drake May now. Spencer Rattler in New Orleans until Derek Carr is healthy. Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, they didn't both win yesterday. Bears, though, they were terrific in London, and it was Caleb's coming out party. Jaden and the Commanders, they saw their four-game win streak snapped at the hands of the Ravens, but he's obviously the real deal and the franchise QB there in D.C. So the other one is Bo Nix in Denver. And yeah, also been a wild ride. And it really is that way for the AFC West behind Kansas City. I mean, they don't make it easy on their fans. They offer heart palpitations with all their close wins. But between the Chargers and the Broncos, yeah, you kind of wonder which team is going to end up pushing the Chiefs, or which team is going to end up there in second place in the AFC West. Justin Herbert looks better coming off of the bye. Looks like he was moving easier. And even though it's all different receivers for him, he knows how to get everybody involved.
Vidal in the backfield, Herbert to throw. To Vidal, right sideline, caught Vidal to the 10, to the 5. Welcome to the NFL. Kamani Vidal. Touchdown, Chargers.
Matt Smith on the Chargers radio network. So yeah, the Chargers able to build a big lead in this one. In fact, I think they were up 20-0 at one point. They were at halftime, it was 20-0. Then they tack on a field goal in the third quarter, and Broncos still haven't scored, so it's 23-0 at this point. They were able to take advantage of some mistakes by the Broncos, obviously, but overwhelming for them in terms of the not just the balance between the run and the pass. The Chargers end up with over 100 yards rushing. Justin Herbert doesn't make any mistakes in this one, so no turnovers for them. Yeah, this was a clean game for the Chargers and for Herbert, but a lot of attention focused on Jim Harbaugh, because in the first quarter, he goes into the blue tent, and people on the broadcast, so I was watching it play out, on the broadcast, they thought that he was going in after one of his own players. I think it was his receiver, Quentin Johnston. And so they saw him going to the tent. Then they realize he's not in there for another player. He's actually in there himself, because he leaves the field. And we hear from the Chargers, and it was also online, that he was questionable to return with an illness.
Yeah, everything turned out to be okay. I deal with this, minor, it's called atrial flutter. I got into an episode today with it, and then doctors checked me out, and it got back into sinus rhythm, normal rhythm. So came back.
That's a little scary. Well, it sounds scary. It sounds like it's something that he does deal with, though. And he was only gone for a little while. I'm glad that his heart was back into its regular rhythm. So he was treated by the team's medical personnel for an irregular heartbeat, but still, though, called this a great and glorious win in Denver. Got an IV, got some magnesium, and then coached the rest of the game, but is expected, right, he did say, actually, that he would be meeting with his cardiologist today. So hoping for the best for Coach Harbaugh. Yeah, as his brother was doing his postgame comments following Baltimore, well, following Ravens Commanders, that one taking place in Baltimore, he was, I guess, notified because he left abruptly to check on his brother. So I'm glad he's doing okay. As for Bo Nix, yeah, you win some, you lose some as a rookie.
You know, on the sideline, our guys continue to battle and battle and battle. You know, despite the situation, despite you know, maybe missing another opportunity or getting off the field again and you have to restart. And, you know, it's tough, but I think that's, you know, that's our team. I think that's what kind of team we have. We have a very determined and hardworking team. You know, we're able to get down and continue to fight. Not every game is going to be easy. You're not going to blow every team out. Sometimes you get knocked down early and you got to find a way to, you know, gut it out at the end. And, you know, the fact that we gave ourselves a chance there at the end to have another opportunity says a lot about our team. And I'm excited about this team. I know today wasn't what we wanted, but I feel like we're headed in the right direction with how we finished the game.
So for the Broncos, after a few wins in a row, dropping back maybe to a little more of reality, but the AFC West, is like that. Behind the Kansas City Chiefs, one day you're the windshield, one day you're the bug. And who figures it out the quickest, right? Because they're all in various states of change. Antonio Pierce, he's the new coach, although he had a couple of games last year. Jim Harbaugh, Sean Payton's only been on the job for just over a year. You're talking about new quarterbacks, I guess, theoretically, for both the Broncos and the Raiders. And the Raiders can't even figure out who their quarterback is. And it's also harder, too, when you're losing people. So for the Chargers around Justin Herbert, a lot of his receivers, in fact, all of his receivers have changed. And now it's J.K. Dobbins instead of Austin Eckler, who's the feature back. The Broncos really have changed everything other than Patrick Surtain. He's the one veteran that they kept. But actually, he left with a concussion early in the game on Sunday, which makes the job infinitely harder. I'm going to say the Kansas City Chiefs on a bye this week and lots of change behind them. But constant change equals constant losing in sports. I don't think that's the Cowboys' problem. And they're not constantly losing. But man, some of their losses are just eye-opening and eyebrow-raising. But if you're wondering about Jerry Jones making a change at coach, the answer is I haven't even considered that. We'll get to Lions and Cowboys coming up. At A-Law Radio to vote for Monday MVP on our Facebook page, too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
We begin with game one of the NLCS in Los Angeles.
One-on-one out in the fourth. Now a 4-0 game. Otani with a laser right center field. And Marte will watch it bounce off the base of the wall. Otani into second. Tommy Edman coming home from first. The throw home. Not in time and off the mark. RBI double. Shohei Otani. An absolute missile to right center field. Hit the base of the wall. Brought Tommy Edman home. It's now 5-0 LA.
The call on Dodgers radio. The Dodgers beat the Mets 9-0 in game one. LA pitching has tied the 1966 Orioles for the longest scoreless inning streak in a single postseason, now with 33. Dodgers starter Jack Flaherty, 7 of those scoreless innings, giving up 2 hits while striking out 6. Now to the NFL, and the Bengals beat the Giants Sunday night 17-7. Joe Burrow with a 47-yard touchdown run in the first quarter. Elsewhere, in Arlington, the Lions crushed the Cowboys 47-9. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones sums up the game.
This was very concerning, and it was very humbling, and it was very, I felt bad because of all of our great fans, and especially the ones in this stadium, and certainly the ones that are all about the Cowboys. So, we've got a lot of work to do.
The news was not all good for the Lions. Aiden Hutchinson suffered a broken tibia in the third quarter and underwent immediate surgery. Elsewhere on the scoreboard, the Falcons over the Panthers 38-20, Colts 20, Titans 17, Chargers 23, Broncos 16, Steelers over the Raiders 32-13, Eagles 20, Browns 16, the Bucks over the Saints 51-27, Texans 41, Patriots 21, Packers over the Cardinals 34-13, Ravens 30, Commanders 23, the Bears over the Jaguars in London 35-16. Game 2 of the WNBA Finals, the Liberty over the Lynx 80-66. That series tied at a game apiece. Game 3 Wednesday in Minnesota. I'm Peter Schwartz.
Jared takes, turns, gives to David.
There he goes with a hold to the 10. Montgomery angling to the 5, fighting his way and spinning inside the 2 to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. David Montgomery running through contact, spinning inside the 5-yard line and finding the house.
Decker goes left, eligible. Skipper goes right, eligible. I formation behind Goff. Takes, turns, gives to Montgomery. Yep. He's eligible. He's into the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. They are putting the wood to the Cowboys here.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Maybe truer words have never been spoken from one Dan Miller on Lions Radio. Yeah, this was a beatdown. And how about David Montgomery signing his 2-year extension to keep him in Detroit until 2027 and then promptly goes out there and rewards the Detroit Lions for putting their faith in him. He has the first touchdown of the game, and honestly, the Lions were off to the races after that, if in fact Lions do engage in races. They had points on all 5 possessions before halftime. Almost no resistance when it came to Jared Goff and the offensive line, not to mention the run game. There really wasn't much of a pass rush from Dallas. Detroit never punted in this game, though once failed on 4th down. So it was an overwhelming and convincing win with just one gut-wrenching moment for the Lions. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. While we're talking about the offense, what it is really amazing to see is how the Lions have become a team that can beat you a variety of ways. So with Jared Goff generally accurate and can zing the ball and having all these guys around him, not just David Montgomery, but how about Jahmyr Gibbs, who they really love as a second year running back behind that offensive line. I mean, you could put a lot of different guys who would be successful on the ground game or on the ground attack. And then you think about the weapons that he's got with Amon-Ra St. Brown, who recently threw a touchdown pass and they like to get creative with him. Whether it's, gosh, who else are we talking about? Oh, Sam Laporta. The way that they can design different formations, Ben Johnson is absolutely going to be a hot commodity when it comes to this next hiring cycle. I know he was in the last one and chose to stay with the Lions for what is good reason. But whether we're talking about Tim Patrick, whether we're talking about Jameson Williams, whether we're talking about Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra in the passing game and then the various guys they can use out of the backfield, we're talking about a plethora of options for Ben Johnson. So it's easier to be creative and to design unique plays when you've got guys who can execute them, kind of like what Andy Reid and his offensive staff do with Patrick Mahomes and the various weapons they've got around them. So one particular moment really kind of was adding insult to injury as the Lions were able to do whatever they wanted, but it shows off the creativity of their offense.
Lions from their own 48 with a first down. Goff up under center, single back Montgomery. Jared takes, tosses to Montgomery, flips it back to Amon-Ra. He gives it to Goff, who's going to throw downfield. He's got Laporta, makes the grab. 20, 15, 10, 5, yes, end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. How about a little razzle-dazzle in the Lone Star State? 52 yards.
Once again, Dan Miller on Lions Radio. So nearly 500 total yards, 184 rushing yards. They also had as much defense as they could possibly need. They didn't allow a touchdown from the Dallas Cowboys, able to turn them over as well. So getting to Dak Prescott 4 times with 4 sacks, a couple of interceptions. Really the only blemish in this one. Oh, I should mention Brian Branch too before I talk about Aiden. Brian Branch ends up with a couple of interceptions and a forced fumble. Only the second player in NFL history ever to do that in a single game. So this was an overwhelming performance, as I say, if not for losing Aiden Hutchinson to a broken leg, one that if you looked closely or you saw it in the moment, you could tell his leg snapped in a direction that it wasn't supposed to. It was a collision with his own teammate, which I'm sure is really terrible for the guy who was on the other end of this, right? We talked about this with Rashee Rice and Patrick Mahomes and how Patrick took out Rashee. It's part of football, but obviously this is a painful blow for Aiden, he's the motor, he's the energy, he brings so much intensity and explosiveness to his pass rush position and his craft, and he had 7.5 sacks before breaking his leg there in the third quarter. And what we found out is that he had surgery last night. In fact, Dan Campbell said right away that they were taking care of him. He would remain in Dallas. And I'm glad that the Lions were able to focus on football and move forward, but this is a really tough blow for them, both for their kind of emotional, I guess, the emotional energy that they bring to the table, but also just in general, their defense.
It's really tough, and he's a guy who's part of the heartbeat of this team, and is a leader, does everything right. He's a great teammate. He's everything you want in a player and a teammate, and to have him go down like that and to be visibly upset is tough for all of us, and he will be fine. You know, he's going to come back eventually, whenever that may be. But knowing him, he will be fine, and he will bounce back.
He's obviously a local product as well, which is why the Lions were so thrilled to draft him number 2 overall a couple of years ago. And it's a big loss on and off the field, as Jared Goff points out. It's also a big deal for their locker room because he's a leader. It is painful to see him suffer that as well. I mean, oh, actually, Pete, I know I asked our newsroom to get Dak Prescott talking about Aiden Hutchinson because Dak had a similar interview a couple of years ago, right? This was his kind of painful broken leg. Not the exact same thing, but he was certainly feeling empathy for Aiden after the game.
Yes, and obviously, Dak. That's tough to watch. As you said, haven't experienced it. Knowing where he is in that moment, hated every bit of it. But for me initially, I just told him, keep his head up. It's part of the story. I promise the way that this guy started his career, the guy he seems to be, not knowing him, he'll be better after it. No, it's probably hard to imagine right now. And then the last part I just told him is it's part of the story. It's part of his story. And, hell of a player. I mean, hell, he did it going out on a sack. So, I mean, game changer. Wishing him the best in his recovery. I know it's going to be a mental challenge just as much as it is physical. But the way that he's started his career and the player that he seems to be, I imagine he'll be just fine and recover from it.
I appreciate that so much from Dak because he went through it and he's talked about what a struggle it was, especially being away from the team. At the same time, the Cowboys have got their own issues. If you're wondering what Jerry Jones believes about Mike McCarthy and whether or not a coaching change is necessary, the Cowboys are 3-3, so it's important to point that out. Quote, oh, I haven't even considered that. I'm not considering that, just so you're clear, I'm not considering that. Jerry Jones. And if you missed my conversation with former Cowboys quarterback and radio analyst Babe Laufenberg, I asked him, why does it feel like the sky is falling? And what do they need to do to boost their run game? You can catch that on our podcast. It's available soon after Hours with Amy Lawrence.